Welcome, everyone, to today's webinar, Commercial versus Open Source Web CMS, Practical Advice for Your Selection Process, presented by AgencyQ and sponsored by Sitecore. My name is Susie McKee, Senior Product Marketing Manager for Sitecore, and I'll be your moderator today. We are recording today's webinar, and we will send attendees a link to the recorded presentation and PowerPoint slides within a couple of days. At the end of the webinar, the presenter will answer questions from attendees. Please feel free to post these questions throughout the presentation in the chat box on your webinar toolbar. We will also post some of your questions at the Twitter hashtag CMS Selection. A brief summary of Sitecore. We provide enterprise-class web content management and marketing software. We've got over 2,500 customers managing over 30,000 websites worldwide. We also have a network of over 700 Sitecore certified partners. Sitecore was rated as a leader in this year's Gartner Magic Quadrant for Web Content Management and has garnered recognition from analysts and media from around the world for being at the cutting edge of web CMS and online marketing technology. Presenting on today's topic is Sean Breen, founder and CEO of AgencyQ, a digital marketing firm with experience implementing open source and commercial CMS solutions. Sean oversees AgencyQ's overall strategy, ensuring the firm's service offerings are in sync with helping clients grow top-line revenue and bottom-line performance. Sean has over 20 years of experience identifying strategic technical, business, and marketing solutions for Fortune 500 companies, the federal government, and nonprofits and associations. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you, Susie. I appreciate it. I wanted to thank everyone for joining us today. Good morning and good afternoon. I'm going to go ahead and start my presentation. I think one of the things that I wanted to talk about first is the fact that AgencyQ and myself have a large amount of experience in implementing both open source and commercial CMSs. The types of clients that we work with are both commercial clients in the federal government and the nonprofit world. I'm speaking to you from my office in Washington, D.C., so you might hear some fire trucks go by. Some of the platforms that we work with on the open source side are Drupal, WordPress, as well as others such as Joomla. I think when you think about how to decide if open source and an open source CMS is right for you and your organization, one of the key things to understand is what does each platform bring to the table. I'm going to start with some basics. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about open source and what distinguishes open source from commercial software. The main differentiator is the source code. The main distinction between open source software and commercial software is access to and the ability to modify the source code. For those of you who are not technical, the source code really is the recipe that dictates how the software works. It's the instructions that communicate with the system and directs the system on what to do. I also want to talk about some other differences between open source software and the commercial world. One of the points that is brought up often is cost. One thing that I want to try to make clear, that open source software does not mean that it's free. I want to spend a little time talking about the use of the word free in the open source world. Open source as free as in free speech, but it is not always free as in free beer. And sometimes those two terms are confused, and I think it's important to understand the distinction that when you're talking about free, that it's clear as to which we're talking about. One of the things that's often discussed in terms of open source is the cost. While a lot of open source software is free, other cost factors need to be understood, such as total cost of ownership. Other important things to think about when thinking about open source is the fact that there are a number of different open source licenses. Many different open source software run on open source licenses, such as the GPL. There's MIT license, or a number of different licenses. There are approximately 42 distinct kinds of open source licenses. The thing that's important to understand about these open source licenses is that some of them restrict what you can do with the source code if you change it. Can you modify it and then redistribute it? How you can modify it and redistribute it? And so it's important as you think about open source and what you want to do with open source software, it's important to understand which license it operates under and how that license impacts your ability to use the software. There's a tangential point to that, which I wanted to bring up and talk about briefly, which is intellectual property rights. One thing that it's important to understand in open source software is the question of who owns the intellectual property rights. And if you modify the source code, who has which rights to the changes in the source code? It's important to also understand the fact that that may have implications as it relates to liability and indemnity. And again, it's something to consider and understand as you think about open source. And as we go further down through this presentation, I'll try to provide some more detail and some more thoughts for consideration. Some other important things to consider when thinking about open source is what I refer to as the support and upgrade problem or issue. As you use open source, one of the things that you need to understand is who is responsible for support and who is responsible for upgrades to the system. For most open source, support is not handled by the creators of the software. It is something that you either need to do yourself or you have to pay a third party to handle. It's important to carefully vet any third party who supports an open source system. This is true of both open source and commercial, but I feel that it's more important in the open source world where the certification of a partner is not necessarily clear. And so that's something that as you think about open source, you want to consider as well. This is something that I think is sometimes not carefully considered, but I think it's an important point, which is the roadmap. Who owns the future of the software, and how is that mapped out? Since different people may have different opinions about open source software and where that software should go in the future, different versions of the software may come about. There's a concept in the open source world known as forking, which is where distinct versions of the same software are created. And that's something that you need to understand as you look into open source. Let me move on to the next slide here. There are many flavors of open source. One thing to understand is that there is such a thing as commercial open source. This type of open source software tries to deal with some of the IP and liability issues, the intellectual property and liability issues, as well as some of the support and roadmap issues. One thing to understand about commercial open source is while you do get the software, you do get the source code, you do not necessarily get indemnification from the IP liability issue. Move on to the next slide here. In this chart, actually, I'm trying to break down the variance between the various options. This chart should give you a rough breakdown of what you get in the commercial world versus what you get in the open source world versus what you get in the commercial open source world. Let's take a second to go through this chart. In the commercial world, while you don't get access to the source code, you do get support and upgrades generally included. The other thing that I think is fairly important is you get a clear roadmap. What is that software going to do in the future? How is that software going to be developed? And that is something that is sometimes unclear in the open source world. That is because open source software is crowdsourced, and sometimes there's a contention between what people want to do with that software. In the commercial open source world, you do get full access to the software, you do get support, but sometimes the roadmap is not quite as clear. And I think the other thing that's important to note is that in the commercial open source software, it can be as expensive as commercial software. And so there is a cost implication to that. I'm going to move on to the next slide here. And I want to spend a few minutes talking about the source code. This is the thing that makes open source open source. It is the recipe, how the software works. It is the code that operates the system. The real question in my mind, though, is how important is it that you're able to modify and change the source code? In my mind, for the normal business user, for the normal company that is out looking for a content management system, changing the code is not a particularly important factor. Generally speaking, it's only important if you need to make extensive modifications to the system. It's only important if you need to change a lot of the core functionality of the system. You'll see in a moment, I'm going to talk about ways that you can extend commercial software that mitigate this need to change the source code in the system. On to the next slide here. So this is one of the main points that I wanted to bring across. Unless you're highly trained, don't mess with the recipe. Our experience has shown that if you make changes to the core source code of the software, you have the potential to greatly increase the total cost of ownership in your open source content management system. Sometimes there's a little bit of confusion here. You can extend and you can change your commercial software package without changing the source code. You can do that through using application interface protocols. You can do that through web services. And you can do it through the configuration of the commercial software. If you do decide to go ahead and change the source code, if you do decide to go ahead and change the recipe, things that you need to be careful of. First of all, I would have you consider that you don't actually need to change the code. That is something that really should only be done by a highly trained person. Don't do it unless you really know what you're doing. This is, I think, a very, very key issue here. If you do it, be prepared for upgrade issues and be ready to support those changes now into the future. Something that we often run into with clients is a client who has made extensive changes to the core of the system. And then when they go to upgrade that system in the future, when a new version of the open source software is released, they have to go and either modify those changes or they have to recode those changes. And this can, if not done correctly, greatly increase your total cost of ownership. So something to be aware of when you're considering the total cost. Which brings me to something that I think is relatively important, the question of total cost of ownership. When you think about open source software and you think about commercial CMS software, one of the things that's easy to understand is how much does that software cost? What's the price tag hanging off the piece of software? What is more difficult to understand is what is the total cost of ownership of operating that software over 3 to 7 years, which is the general lifespan of a content management system. The purchase price is generally a relatively small slice of the total cost of ownership. Depending on the complexity of the project, depending on the types of integration that are required, the purchase price of the software can be relatively low as 10 or 5%. Generally speaking, it can account for something along the lines of 20% of the total cost. The things that are a little harder to see, which require some digging, in which I think it's important to dig, is how much is support going to cost, what do upgrades look like, and how should you account for those? Move on to the next slide here. The truth is there is no quick and easy formulation when it comes to calculating the total cost of ownership between commercial and open source software. There's a number of variables that play a part there. Those include which systems need to be integrated, the types of workflow and other features of the system that need to be implemented, the amount of content that needs to be migrated, and a number of various issues. So it would be wrong for me to sit here and tell you that open source software has a higher or a lower total cost of ownership than commercial software. The question is, how does open source software and its total cost of ownership profile map to your organizational needs? The same is true on the commercial side as well. So all I can do is give you things to consider when it comes to total cost of ownership. Those are, in which I think actually is one of the more, robust parts of the overall total cost of ownership, which is support. Again, in our experience, content management systems are installed. When they are installed, usually last anywhere between 3 and 7 years. Usually what we would expect as a life cycle out of a content management system is something along the lines of 5 years. So once you've installed that system, getting support, and support is more than just having questions answered or getting a ticket answered. It's training, being able to make sure that your staff who have to use the system on a day-to-day basis can get training when they need. There's an organization that can successfully train them efficiently, as well as do the normal sorts of things such as answer questions, deal with bug issues, and deal with security issues that may arise. So things that we think that are important questions to ask yourself when you're trying to understand the total cost of ownership profile are around what kind of training organization is there, what kind of support organization is there behind the software, what kind of professionals work in that software, and what level of certification have they obtained or can they obtain. The other question is how are upgrades handled? Is the upgrade path smooth? Or is there a lot of changes that are needed for an upgrade to be successfully done? The important point to make with open source as it relates to this is as changes are made to the base source code, not always, there are plenty of times when the changes are done well, the upgrade path is not rocky, but there are plenty of cases where the changes to the core system have been made, and then the upgrade path is no longer clear. And what we've seen some clients do is because the upgrade path is now difficult because of changes they've made to the system, they stop upgrading the system. And that, generally speaking, has its own set of problems, including problems related to security and making sure that that their system has all security issues addressed. So not upgrading the system as a result of not having an easy upgrade path can lead to other IT evils, including security issues and the like. Some more things to think about when selecting a CMS. I've talked about the basics between closed source systems, most commercial systems, and open source systems as it relates to the source code and how you can modify that source code. But some other things to consider, which I think are important, are CMS features and functions. Modern content management systems handle the basics well, being able to go and edit a page, being able to modify code, having good separation between the data and content layer and the presentation layer, being able to handle CSS and HTML separation. But there are some things that I think you should pay particular attention to. Something that sometimes escapes people's analysis is the ease and use of the editor. Again, since the system is going to be used from at least 3 years, but as long as 7 years in our experience, the day-to-day efficiency of the editor, the ability of the editors to use and understand what they're editing and how to edit it is very important. And that's something that you should look for. Also look for a good object model in the system, system that gives you clear distinction between the content and the presentation layer of the system. That's something that you should pay attention to as well. Some more items to think about as you go through your selection process are what I would refer to as some of the more advanced features. Does the web CMS support more advanced marketing-oriented features such as personalization, both explicit and implicit, workflows? As content management systems become more complicated, as web properties become more complicated, the ability to have an efficient, clear workflow, the ability to visualize that workflow well, is very important to managing larger web properties. On the personalization end of things, what we're finding in the marketplace is that personalization is becoming something that is more and more popular. And there's a relatively straightforward answer to that. People are looking to drive conversions on their website. They're looking to drive people to take certain actions, be it in e-commerce, or be it getting more information, or downloading a white paper, or any number of different calls to action that you are trying to accomplish on your website. Well, personalization allows you to fine-tune and deliver content that is more likely to result in a conversion. And at the end of the day, that's the name of the game. Some other advanced marketing features that you should think about is multivariate testing, the ability to have integrated microsites and email campaigns. Again, thinking about the front end of the funnel, the ability to drive people to your website, to drive to them content that is relevant, and then use that to drive conversions is important. By having that integrated, that gives you a more holistic view of how people are coming to your site and how they're acting once they get to your site. The ability to have an access robust analytics is very important as well. And so these are some of the more advanced features that you should consider when you're thinking about deploying a CMS. And the other question that I think sometimes is not overtly put on the table is simply because an organization doesn't do it now, because the implementation of a content management system should last a number of years, make sure that you understand not only today what's needed and what's required, but also understand what is likely to be needed and required in the future, and make sure that any platform that you're thinking about has the capability of handling those potential future needs. And I think that's an important point. I'll get a little bit into the sort of technical items right now. Something that is important to consider when selecting a content management system is what platform it's on. I'm going to touch on these relatively briefly because these are relatively technical points. The major platforms that you'll find out in the marketplace are what's referred to as the LAMP platform, which is really a Linux platform. It's a Linux stack of web server software, operating system, database, and programming. Most open source systems operate on the LAMP stack, so there are some open source content management systems that operate on both the Java and the Microsoft.NET platform. The preponderance of open source CMS platforms operate on the LAMP stack. The question is, why does the platform matter? Again, bringing it back to the total cost of ownership question, the platform can, if selected correctly, can ease integration and reduce your total cost of ownership. Generally speaking, and again, I will emphasize the word generally here, the Microsoft stack, the Microsoft.NET platform, and the Java stack are generally considered enterprise platforms. And if you're looking to integrate with enterprise class systems, generally speaking, you will have an easier time doing that if you're on a Microsoft.NET platform or a Java platform. Again, I emphasize that that's a general approach to that problem, to that question. Some more things to consider as we're thinking about selecting CMSs and some of the distinctions that exist between open source and commercial CMSs are the ability to have add-ons or to have a quick or smooth integration with other systems. In this day and age, a website is a platform for delivering information. That delivery may occur on mobile. It may occur through a standard web browser. But at the end of the day, a content management system is a broker or has become a broker between what people consume information on the front end, such as their tablets or their phones or their computers, and information that is on the back end, which is content. But in many different cases, there is more information that needs to be accessed as well, such as customer relationship management information, CRM system information, ERP system, where's my order, when is this part going to be delivered, e-commerce system. These are all systems that a good CMS platform will have a robust, understood, well-tested, well-qualified, pro-built integration to. And so as you consider CMSs, do not forget to consider how you integrate that CMS with external systems. By having a CMS platform and system that is demonstrably able to integrate with these external or other back-end systems can really drive down your total cost of ownership. And again, one of the things I'm trying to highlight here is the fact that when you are looking at costs, don't let some of these hidden costs, which are hard to take a pencil out to and put a number next to, escape you. Try to take the widest view possible as to what items you need to think about when assessing how much a system costs to purchase, install, and operate over a lifespan. On here. And some more things to think about. And this is bringing me back to an earlier point, which I wanted to highlight once more, which is changing the core source code of the system is usually not the best way to extend or integrate the system. By leveraging the APIs that that the platforms provide, be it the .NET platform or any other platform, is a great way to extend that system, to provide flexibility in the way that system operates or is used, to provide the ability to integrate that system with another system such as Salesforce or Microsoft Dynamics. An alternate way to integrate as well is through web services. And don't forget that a number of systems, a lot of the function of how that system operates, how that system looks, how that system feels, how you operate that system, can be controlled through the actual configuration of the system as well, mitigating the need to go in and modify the core source code of the system. So sometimes in the debate or the thoughts between commercial and open source content management systems, a lot of technical details get brought about. And while understanding the technical considerations is important, understanding the cost implications are incredibly important. There's a third leg to that stool, which I think is equally important, which I want to spend a few minutes discussing as well, and those are business considerations. So we've touched very briefly on some of the technical considerations. We spent a little bit more time talking about the cost considerations, and how total cost of ownership includes a lot more than just the purchase price of the software, but includes a much broader spectrum of things that need to be considered. We're now going to talk a little bit about business considerations. As you bring aboard a content management system, as that system becomes part of your IT infrastructure and becomes part of your organization, it is in a lot of ways a living and breathing thing. It has its own life cycle. It has to be installed, has to be configured, data needs to be brought into it, needs to be tested, and then you need to live for it, live with it, for a number of years. And this is something that I think is important to understand here. Having a support organization that is responsible and accountable for ensuring that the software works and is installed correctly is important. Having a clear understanding of who addresses security issues is important and who's accountable for those issues. Again, I want to highlight, as I said earlier in the conversation, that there is no perfect algorithm to figure out which works best for your organization, which is the right mix of these issues to consider in your organization. But I think it is important to consider if in your organization, having one throat to choke, having one group that is responsible for making sure that there's a clear roadmap, that there's a clear support protocol, that there's a clear training protocol, and that security issues are their responsibility is something to consider. Now, there are certainly some organizations, as they look at what they need to accomplish, as they look at what their requirements are, may decide that that is not an important fact, but there are many organizations who will look at this as well and say that, yes, this is important. This is something that we, as an organization, want. Continuing on, business considerations, as I've talked about earlier, the life cycle of a content management system on the very short side would be about 3 years. On the more aggressive side would be about 7 years. Making sure that after you've installed that system, you have a clear understanding of where that system is going to be, not just next year or the year after, but in several years to come. Something that I think is sometimes a challenge for the open source community is to articulate how much goes into the research and development of the system. One of the benefits that, commercial platforms have is they can point to their financials and say, we spend this amount of money every year to make sure that we are in front of the curve. And so trying to understand what the life cycle of that system, how much money goes into the research and development of that system to ensure it has a solid, stable roadmap over the next 7 years is something that you need to consider. Again, some organizations will come down on the side of that that's not critically important to them, and others will come down on the side of this is very important to understand where this platform is going to be in 4, 5, or 6 years. Additionally, when there are changes in the marketplace, such as the move towards cloud computing, understanding who's responsible or what the roadmap is for moving your investment to a new platform is important. This is both true on sort of the IT infrastructure side of things. It's also true on the device, the front-end consumption of content, such as new tablets being released, new versions of tablet operating systems. Who's responsible for making sure that your content management system can successfully handle and render out information to those devices while being very efficient for your staff to use? So I'm going to jump back a little bit more to the total cost of ownership issue, and this is something that I highlighted earlier in the conversation. That total cost of ownership, I think, is a subject that is worth discussing and thinking about in a great amount of detail. During the conversation, as we talk to our clients, as we try to help them analyze if open source is a right solution for them or commercial platform is a right solution for them, helping them understand the total cost of ownership is something that sometimes takes a little time. The reason being is, as I stated earlier, you can look at the price of what a piece of software costs if there's a price tag hanging off of it, but in the open source world, sometimes the price of the software is zero, which is attractive, but there are some implications further down the road to the total cost of ownership picture. So make sure that as you think about this, as you build out a model of how to account for all these costs, you look for all the hidden costs as it relates to supporting that software over its life cycle, and do your best to account for and adjudicate what those costs may look like now and in the future. And I hope that I've provided you at least some guidance on some items to think about as you consider what the total cost of ownership may be. I now want to jump on to what I like to refer to as Sean's quick and dirty guide on when things make sense, when does it make sense to use open source, and when does it make sense to use a commercial package. And again, I want to emphasize the fact that different organizations have different requirements, and what I say in these slides may not hold exactly true for your organization, but having done this for a number of years, having seen a lot of different life cycles as it relates to content management systems, certain commonalities come to the front. And what I try to do here is articulate what some of these commonalities are. In my view, open source web content management systems make the most sense for most people when there is a limited need for advanced marketing features. You simply don't need a very complicated workflow, or importantly, very clear visualization of those workflows, highly integrated email campaign management and microsite management, as well as some of the other features that I articulated earlier as it relates to some of the more advanced marketing features of a web content management system. Another hallmark of when open source might be a good choice is when there is limited to no integrations with enterprise systems. Again, this touches back onto the platform question. But generally speaking, if you're trying to integrate into a very complex enterprise architecture, sometimes open source may not be the best choice there. Again, this is the quick and dirty guide. You have another good indicator as to when open source might be a good choice for you is when you have limited organizational risk to support issues. You have or you're able to support the system moving forward if you do make changes to it. That would be an indicator that open source might make sense for you. Again, a little bit of a controversial point here. If you do choose open source, I want to highlight again the concept that doing so, I would work as hard as I could as an organization to make sure we don't make changes to the core underlying source code of the system for all the total cost of ownership and other support issues that I've highlighted earlier. And now I'm going to talk very briefly on my quick and dirty guide here to when commercial web CMSs make sense, again, for most people. Generally speaking, the hallmark of when we start to think that a commercial CMS makes the most sense for a client is there is a need now, or there will be a need relatively soon, for advanced marketing features. What I've seen in the marketplace is a bifurcation between some of the open source content management systems and the more advanced commercial platforms, that being that the more advanced commercial platforms have more robust advanced marketing features and really build on the concept of a web content management system as a central hub for sending data out to your end users to consume and integrating with your back-end systems. And then layering on top of that an advanced marketing a suite that allows you to leverage that to drive conversions. Another hallmark again, where we think a commercial web content management system would make a lot of sense is where there is a pre-existing and strong enterprise system architecture. This generally falls along the lines that most open source content management systems are LAMP-based, while most commercial platforms work on either the .NET platform or the Java platform, which generally speaking are easier to plug into things like Dynamics and other enterprise platforms. So if there's a well-established enterprise architecture in an environment, for us that's a generally a good indicator that a commercial platform would make the most sense. If the organization is risk-averse, again, is looking for that one neck to choke, wants to have a clear path between issues that they're trying to solve and the people who are not only responsible for those issues but accountable for those issues, that is a good telltale sign of when a commercial web content management system would make the most sense. So I want to just spend 1 second recapping. What I would like to leave you with most is the idea of choosing the right tool for the right job. I have seen plenty of open source web content management systems succeed very, very well. I've seen plenty of commercial packages fail terribly. The question is what is the distinction? Where is the right tool for the right job? Well, I gave you my thoughts on the previous two slides on how to align what you need or your customers need to what the right package or platform is. If you put open source into the right environment, it can succeed very well. If you put it into the wrong environment, it can fail terribly. The corollary is true for commercial. So take the time to consider and to understand the right tool for the right job. And that, I think, is the most important point as you go through this process and thinking about this. That is the end of my presentation. I wanted to take a moment to thank everyone, and I apologize for some of the noise in the background, but I hope everyone learned something and enjoyed it.
Thank you, Sean, very much for that engaging presentation. We've got some great questions that have come in for you. I would like to encourage everyone to continue submitting questions using the webinar toolbar throughout the Q&A or via Twitter at hashtag CMS selection. So first question is, can you give some examples of commercial open source content management systems?
Sure, absolutely. Commercial open source platforms. There's a .NET platform called Umbreco, which is a commercial open-source platform. There is Magnolia, which is a Java-based commercial open-source platform. There's a variant of Drupal called Acquaint, which is also a commercial open-source platform based on the community version of Drupal. With Magnolia as well, the commercial version of Magnolia is based on the community version of the Magnolia content management system.
Okay.
So those are three that I can pull right off the top of my head. There are more as well.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Next question, when is it okay to change the source code in CMS?
That is an excellent, excellent question. And in a lot of ways cuts to the sort of heart of the question and the debate. Generally speaking, in my mind, you got to look at the question in two ways. What are the technical reasons for wanting to do so, and what are the business implications of doing so? And so we'll start with the technical side. Generally speaking, you will need to or you will want to change the code of the system when you need to modify some core aspect of the way the system operates. Now, it begs the question in a certain way, you know, different open source content management systems have different strengths and limitations, and depending on what you're actually trying to accomplish, you may have to go in and modify that code. That being said, if you do go modify the code, you need to be very, very careful to make sure you work in the most upgrade-safe manner possible. and to make sure that you do everything you can to stick to the coding standard that the developer has developed. Now, the complexity of this problem is relatively deep. You know, the quality of the code in some of these open source systems varies in great degrees. In some of the systems, it's incredibly good, and in some of the systems, it's not very good at all. And no matter what you do, you may run into upgrade problems. That's the technical answer. The business answer is, if you do make those changes, you need to be prepared to support those changes in the future. What does that mean? It means if there are fixes that come out, you need to vet and make sure that your code changes don't impact those updates. You'll probably need to retest the entire system from a functional standpoint to ensure that any changes that the community has made to the system don't impact the changes that you've made to the system. And you may have to spend time adjudicating those things, sort of resolving conflicts between the changes that you made and the changes that you've taken from the community. And so you just need to have the ability to support that. I think where people run afoul most in changing the source code is they go and they find someone who knows the programming language and is somewhat familiar with the platform, and they roll up their sleeves and they make a whole bunch of changes without sort of the long-term considerations of what that means. Again, I'll go back to my earlier point, which is I would work hard not to change the code. If that's unavoidable, then I would ensure that you as an organization understand the cost implications and the support implications, including potential security issues that may arise out of the changes that have been made. And you are able to support that both from a financial standpoint and from an organizational standpoint. And the third is, if you are going to go and make those changes, make sure you find someone very reputable to do it, and or make sure that you follow as closely as possible the recommendations of community as to how to modify the code as to make it as upgrade safe as possible.
Okay, thank you. And a question actually related to the first one that came in. You talked about, you gave some examples of commercial open source CMSs, mm-hmm. and someone is asking, what are the primary open source CMSs that you see in the marketplace? So not commercial, but open source.
Not commercial. So the ones that we run into the most often, and I'll give you a little bit of sort of background on them, is, first of all, Drupal. That's a system that we see a fair amount. It's a good system. It has some complexity in the way that it's engineered that can mean that if you do modify the code, you can get yourself into some trouble fairly quickly. So I would make sure with Drupal that you're very careful about it. It's one that we do see in the marketplace a lot. Additionally, we see WordPress. Drupal tends to be slightly used for slightly more complicated websites. WordPress is a good, quick and dirty website creator. It's not as complex as Drupal, and we see that a fair amount in the environment as well as Joomla. Those are really the three primary ones, but the ones that we see most often are WordPress and Drupal.
Okay, thank you. And next question, is there a particular type of client or application in which open source is a better fit?
Is there a particular type of client? That's an excellent question. Generally speaking, where we find open source makes the most sense, the commonalities between success in an open source project and the organization is, one, they don't have a very large, well-established enterprise environment. Two is they have a very sophisticated IT staff who can really understand the ramifications of working with a content management system where you get to deal with all of the internal wiring of the system and the ramifications of I'm using an analogy here, of course, if you change some of the wiring, ensuring that you're not shorting something out or, rearranging which floors the elevator goes to. And so not having a deep enterprise architecture already in place and having a good IT staff, generally speaking, those tend to be organizations that are just starting up, or those are organizations that are technical organizations themselves and can understand the software development lifecycle, do understand the implications both from a risk standpoint, from a time standpoint, and from a total cost of ownership standpoint, what it means to take on that responsibility. And in those cases, we do see success there. Where we don't, I'm going to take the liberty to sort of answer the corollary of the question, which is, you know, where do we see it unsuccessful? A lot of times where it's brought into an organization without, without buy-in from the organization higher-ups, without an understanding that the cost of a system is not just the cost of getting software, it's the life cycle cost of the system. And sometimes people do not consider the fact that, you know, you've downloaded it, you've got it running, you're able to get a quick and dirty website up, you know, this is great, it's fantastic. Now we want to go make a bunch of tweaks to it. They go and they hire a programmer, they make a bunch of tweaks to it, and they think they're great for a year or two until they need to do an update to the system, and then all of a sudden the update won't take, doesn't work, they're stuck, the programmer they contracted with is gone, or they can't find them, and they now have a system which they depend on, and the only fix to the system is really a rip and replace, because the changes that have been made to the core of the system were not done sufficiently well that they're able to upgrade, and the cost of detangling those changes is greater than the replacement cost of the system. And those are the more unfortunate situations that we walk into. And the tricky part of that whole thing is the problem doesn't become apparent until sometime in the future. And that, I think, is the more insidious question that I think people should be aware of, is a lot of times the ramifications of those decisions don't really become apparent until a year or two down the line.
Got it. Thank you. And I think we've got time for one more question. What are some of the features that you're seeing in the commercial world that you're not seeing in the open source world?
And, you know, obviously because we're talking about sort of big general concepts here, commercial CMS versus open source CMS, the devil's in the details. But generally speaking, what we're seeing in the commercial world, which we're seeing the open source lag behind, is the concept of marketing integration and automation. And a number of commercial vendors do this to varying degrees. This is something that we see in a few different commercial packages. What we also see, generally speaking, that's done better in the commercial world than in the open source world is the sophistication and elegance of the editor and how you access and use the editor. Also, the visualization of workflows and the visualization of how the system is operating, in my mind, is definitely better in the commercial world. So those are the things that as we sort of have one eye towards the open source world and one eye towards the commercial world, these are some of the distinctions that we're seeing come out between the two worlds.
Great. Sean, thank you very much for those thorough answers. At this point, we'll end today's presentation so everyone can get back to their busy schedules. I wanted to put out a thank you to our sponsor, Redmond Magazine. As a reminder, we will email you the link to this presentation, including a PDF, so you can view it again and share with colleagues. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, and we hope to see you again at a future SiteCore webinar.